your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Welcome to Healing the Grieving Heart with your host, the mother-daughter team of Dr. Gloria Horsley and Dr. Heidi Horsley. Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi have devoted their lives to helping individuals move forward after a profound loss and each week share stories of hope and understanding. They dedicate their show to their son and brother Scott and to others who have lost loved ones. Now join Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi and share the journey from grief and loss to hope and renewal.
Hello, I'm Dr. Gloria Horsley with my co-host,
Dr. Heidi Horsley.
Each week, Heidi and I welcome you to Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and conversation with those who suffer the loss of a loved one and for healthcare professionals who work in this most difficult field. As always, the message is others have been there before you and made it. You can too. You need not walk alone. These shows are archived on our blog, thegriefblog.com, as well as the CompassionateFriends.org website. All shows can be downloaded on iTunes, and transcripts can be accessed on thegriefblog.com. Well, Heidi, we've got a couple of wonderful guests today. Our first topic today is going to be finding meaning after the death of a child, and we have two special guests. Our first guest is Emily Leitman, bereaved mom of Daniel, and editor of the book Our Children, Our Hearts, Journeys of Child Loss and Remembrance. And our second guest is Joanne Cacciatore, bereaved mom of Cheyenne and founder of MISS, M-I-S-S, Mothers in Sympathy and Support Foundation. Well, Heidi, the blog is just going great guns, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and we've gotten so many responses even this morning. Back and forth, people talking to each other about their own experiences with loss, people empathizing with each other, people supporting each other.
Yeah, it's just wonderful to see that happen, and the foundation's coming along, the Open to Hope Foundation, and we want you to know that we're going to be doing a lot of blogs, so if you're interested in blogging on for blogs related to widows, widowers, children, we're going to have an AIDS blog, a teen blog. What else are we having,
Miscarriage
Heidi?
A miscarriage blog.
So we've got lots of things going on and coming up, so please go to our
Father Loss blog.
Yeah.
I wanted to say something also that I think is very exciting that we're doing. If you know, right now the way that the archives are set up for these radio shows, it's difficult to really get a sense of what the past shows were about. But what we're doing is putting, our blogmaster is putting e-cards. Right, Mom? Maybe you can.
Yeah, on all the past shows, so you're going to be able to read about every show we have on, more about our guests. So we're excited about that.
Yeah, so you can go in and listen to past shows that you may have not heard of before, and they might be helpful.
And we're pre-recording this show today because Heidi and I are going to be at the Compassionate Friends Conference when this show is aired, and we are going to be giving workshops, and we're going to let you know, because some of those Compassionate Friends workshops are going to be recorded, and you'll be able to purchase those recordings and hear what went on at the Compassionate Friends Conference. So, Heidi, would you like to introduce our guest today?
Sure, I'd love to. Our first guest today is Emily Leitman, and our topic is finding meaning after the death of a child. Emily is a licensed clinical social worker practicing in New Rochelle and New York City. She is the bereaved mother of Daniel and editor of the book Our Children, Our Hearts, Journeys of Child Loss and Remembrance. She has been a facilitator at the Bereavement Center of Westchester. Welcome to the show, Emily.
Thank you. Thank you. Happy to be here.
It's great to have you on the show, and I'm really impressed. I've really enjoyed this book, Our Hearts, Our Children, Our Hearts, Journeys of Child Loss and Remembrance. It's about 25 children who died, and their family members write about them. And what I like about this book, Emily, is, for one thing, their pictures, which I love to see pictures of the kids. The other thing Heidi and I found about this book is it's a little different because it's really personal. I mean, it's not edited and worked together. You know, it's not quite as slick as some other books I've read. It's really from the heart.
Right, right. People speak in their own voices, and we have quite a diversity of parents. It's not written by clinicians. It is written by moms and dads whose children have died, and siblings as well. And they really reflect a diversity of backgrounds and experiences.
Yeah, it's quite amazing.
And
well,
I also like the fact that you know, I picked it up today and I was in a hurry, but you can get through each story quickly. They're not really, really long, which I think is nice because you can get through a story and then put it down and come back later and get through another story.
Right.
And that's, I like that part about it too.
Yeah, because sometimes when you're suffering a grief and loss, you know, you need to have short sound bites.
Well, that's it. If things are too dense and too complex, it's hard to concentrate and focus. And I didn't find those kind of books helpful when I was newly bereaved.
Mm-hmm. So I thought it was great. Well, Emily, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about your background and how you got into this. I noticed that you have had a child die. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
It's been 10 years. Still sometimes feels like yesterday, but it has been 10 years since Daniel died. He was 12 and a half, and he was perfectly healthy, but had an asthma attack and anaphylactic shock, and was in a coma for a couple of days, and he died in a hospital here in Westchester.
That is shocking.
And were you a social worker at the time?
Yeah, I'm a psychotherapist, and I have a practice in Westchester in New Rochelle as well as in New York City, and did not work with anything to do with bereavement or loss. And after Daniel died, I went back for some training, and I now lead support groups. I facilitate support groups for child loss on a weekly basis with parents who've lost their child.
Now tell me, because I was a therapist at the time, my Scott died also, and he was 17, killed in an automobile accident, and I worked on a surgical unit at a hospital, and I worked with a lot of families where there was death and a burn unit and all that kind of thing. I was truly shocked at how difficult it was. Were you? Were you surprised at how horrendous it was?
How horrendous?
Having a child die was?
The pain people who know will understand immediately, but it was important, really important, for us, my husband and myself, to find some way of giving something back and remembering and having the whole world know Daniel.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately, we wanted not just his friends who wrote in and sent emails. We created a website, but we needed to do, and I started working in child loss about 2 years, 2 years after. And it was important for us to find a way of keeping his memory alive. And I think that's the creation of the book. Is the first part is experiences and how a child died in the situation. But the second part is making sure that the world, as one of the moms said, the world knows Adam.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's a lovely tribute. Now, if our audience out there wants to write something, what would you say about writing? How did you get people to approach this? How would they approach it?
It was very interesting. This came from most of the people in our support group, and people were journaling. They were writing, keeping some of their own personal journals, and some of them found that just putting the words on paper and thinking about them could be very cathartic. Others, when we talked about the idea of putting a book together in the group, they said, oh, no, I don't write, I don't do this well, my English is poor. And we met individually with these moms and dads, and immediately they just couldn't stop talking. They couldn't stop writing. So some of us took notes for them and then just gave them the notes back, and then they created their own essays.
Oh, I love that. That's a wonderful idea. If you don't feel like you can write, tell somebody.
Right.
Or record it and let them put it down. Because,
right.
Because I think that's what's so powerful about this book, frankly, is that it's not skilled writers writing, you know, in a lot of cases.
And
I'm sure in some there are.
And people are so real with what they are experiencing after the loss. They are real and they're honest and they're upfront in this book, which I appreciated because I could identify with a lot of those emotions.
Yeah,
there is a lot of passion. There's anger.
Mm-hmm.
People sharing their guilt, regrets, and it's honest emotions. Yes.
One that Heidi thought was particularly heart-rending was the gift of fellowship and relationship, the Daniel Valquez.
Yes, yes.
Was
yes,
the boy who died.
I mean, his father, Franklin, Velasquez is an adjunct at Fordham, which in social work, which is of interest to me because I'm an adjunct at Columbia. And I loved what he said at the end. He says, you know, his son died, Daniel died of an accidental drug overdose. And at the end, he says, Franklin, the father says, perhaps the death will awaken me to life and create a rebirth for my own soul and life.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was so beautiful.
Right, right. And he also mentions in his essays about fellowship, and the greatest gift is the gift of fellowship. So in his mind, he's going to be searching for God's presence in his life with others.
And he gave quite a tribute to you, by the way, too,
and the power
coming into
groups.
His life.
Yes.
And the power of groups and the power of people.
Right, mm-hmm. And what God has done. And we have many of our writers talk about religion and the anger that they have with God. And,
and I loved Mike. I so identified with Mike, the sibling.
Yes.
Who basically said, as you can tell, I'm mad as hell. I'm angry.
Mm-hmm.
I am angry. And then he went on to list... Yeah, and I could so identify with that and appreciated his honesty.
Now, we're hoping that Michael come on to the show later on. But also, is there anybody else in here that particularly comes out for you when you think about this book, Emily?
In terms of?
Just something that you think that would be helpful to our audience that they've said.
Do you think people resonated with?
Yeah, I think two areas. One is addressing families and friends who do want to be there and who want to comfort us. And how do they do that? So this gives some suggestions of listening to your friends express feelings, and that's not so easy to do, as we all know, and that's truly a gift and a skill to be able just to listen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's helpful to the mom or dad whose child has died, or the sibling.
Yeah, you have a nice section back there on what people can say.
Saying and writing the child's name often, just calling on the phone, and even if no one picks up, which is pretty hard to do early on, and talk, just letting you know we're thinking of you, we're there for you, give us a call if you'd like, you know.
Okay.
So to reaching out to families and friends is a little bit difficult. And the other part of the book that I like is which all of us have written, is how we remember our children, our living memorials to our children.
Oh, yes. Talk about that. What are some of the things that our audience can do out there to remember that you found?
Since we started writing the book, I've learned a lot from other moms and dads and things that are happening all the time. But, you know, having a fundraiser or a walk or a concert, someone just did Swim Across America where they put together a swimming team.
Oh, my goodness.
I think they do it throughout the East and Seaboard. I don't know if you have it out there out West.
I haven't heard about it in California, but
yeah.
It sounds wonderful.
And so they put a team together. And in memory of a girl who died of cancer, and they call it Talia's team. High school scholarships, lighting candles, making photo albums. A few of our writers have put together beautiful albums and of their children, poems, magazines, books, all kinds of books. Many books have been written. Tattoos. We have a few people who have very memorable tattoos. Jewelry. They've created jewelry with necklaces and holograms. And I know Compassionate Friends does that as well.
Well, it's time for us to go to break. And when we come back, maybe we can talk a little bit more about some rituals and things that people can do in remembrance. We're talking to Emily Lateman today, and we're talking about finding meaning after the death of a child. You can reach us through our blog, thegriefblog.com, and these shows can be downloaded on MP3 files. And this show is brought to you by the Open to Hope Foundation. Please stay tuned for more.
A healthy dialogue for your lifestyle. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Hello, Doctors Gloria and Heidi are pleased to announce that their new book, Teen Grief Relief, Parenting with Understanding, Support, and Guidance, published by Rainbow Books, is now available. Grief Relief can be ordered through thegriefblog.com as well as Amazon. Book orders can be made through the Book Clearinghouse at 800-431-1579. This book is a must for any family suffering a loss. Get your copy right now at thegriefreliefblog.com or amazon.com.
Hi, my name is Rachel Hibbard. I'm a graduate student in the psychology department at the University of Missouri, St. Louis. If you've lost a loved one and are over 18 years old, I would like to invite you to participate in a brief online study of religious coping with bereavement. Your participation will contribute to a better understanding of grief and loss, and you'll have the option of being entered in a raffle to win a $100 gift certificate to Amazon.com. If you're interested, please go to www.thegriefblog.com for further information. Thank you.
This is Dr. Gloria Horsley. Just a reminder to our listeners that you can own 10 of the very best Healing the Grieving Heart shows, available on CD. Our listeners tell us that they have used these shows to examine the many viewpoints of grief and to stimulate conversation on this difficult subject. Call toll-free 877-969-0010, that's 877-969-0010, to order a set or visit the CompassionateFriends.org website and click on TCF Originals for the opportunity to purchase this specially priced set at only $60 for 10 CDs plus shipping and handling. Heidi and I have donated all the proceeds to the Compassionate Friends to help bereaved families following the death of a child.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi on Healing the Grieving Heart.
Well, hello, I'm Dr. Heidi with my mom, Dr. Gloria, and we are talking today with Emily Leitman about finding meaning after the death of a child. Welcome back to the show, Emily and Gloria.
Thanks, Heidi.
Thank you.
Well, Emily, welcome back. When we went to break, we were talking about some of the wonderful rituals that people have done that you met with in your groups, and there was a swim, and what were some of the other things you were talking about? And do you have any other ideas? Are there religious rituals that people do? And
We have angel statues. Somebody had created an angel statue in upstate New York, and now many people flock to just sit around the statue, and this was done in memory of her son who had died. She did not write for the book, but everyone who is part of the book has certainly gone up and visited with the statue. People, trees, plants, songs. There's a beautiful song that was written called The Greatest Embrace. One of our writers discusses the best thing that could happen is she looks forward to embracing her daughter who died at the age of 2, and at some point they'll be together.
That's
and
powerful.
The song is on a CD now done by Lisa Mathis, and it's quite something. Mm-hmm. Very
I love music. Music brings us to such a deep level.
Yeah.
It
Another person
does.
Has a teddy bear with all of her children's T-shirts and shorts. There is a company that creates teddy bears with your children's clothing and becomes meaningful forever. Personalized greeting cards. A couple of people have angels on their porches and in the backyards. quilts. Putting together all the pockets and T-shirts that the child had into a quilt.
I was going to say I've seen some fabulous life quilts done after someone has died with everything that they love dearly, you know, in a quilt. And you can even have them somehow the infused in a quilt, you know, copies of CDs made and put and sewn onto a quilt. I mean, it's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Very good. Well, in the book, Marie Ong talks on healing, and I love she asks, is there such a thing as healing after loss of a child? And then she answers it, which is something I think is really lovely. She says, I think of it more as picking up the pieces and moving on. Can you talk a little bit about Marie and her work?
She had done a beautiful painting that is in the book, and this was right after her daughter had died. She created a painting where, it's difficult to describe, but the essence is that her heart is with her daughter. And her daughter is reaching up to the golden light, and is not afraid of death. Mm-hmm. And her daughter was sick with cancer for a number of years. And so Maria had done a painting about that. But Maria knows a lot about healing. She's has a lot of philosophies of Buddhist philosophy. She's well-read. And the book also lists a number of helpful books and resources that people can get support and inspiration from. Marie has been a terrific member of our group and feels that now she needs to be there for her other daughter and for her family. And she is very much so.
And you were talking about you and your husband felt that you really wanted to do something in your son Daniel's name for remembrance. I wonder, is he a therapist?
My husband, no. My husband is in business.
Uh-huh.
But after my brother-in-law created the website shortly after Daniel died so that his friends could write emails to everybody, and especially to Daniel saying goodbye.
Uh-huh.
I guess that was the first thing we had done. And then we supported a new children's hospital in Westchester, the Maria Ferrari Children's Hospital, and had some fundraisers and gave that money to the hospital in order to set up a room for other children who were going through illness. And so we felt very, very good about that.
Now tell me, do you see with these groups and with the books and everything, a difference between men and women's grief, and would you have any advice for our folks out there who are newly bereaved?
Men and women, as I think both of you know, mourn quite differently, and I think the best thing that you can do is, whether you have a spouse or a partner or any family member with different genders, is to respect and support the fact that people mourn differently.
Yeah, how do you see the difference?
Well, most of our group, I will say, most of our group is women, female moms. We have fewer dads, but when the dads come, a lot of them are less talkative, less communicative, but are really listening and are very much supporting their spouses and other people in the group through body language, through a hand-holding. So verbally, perhaps they're not communicating the same way as their spouse, but they really are there and need to do other things in remembering. We have a dad who has pictures all over his office and all over his house about on his daughter, and mom can't look at pictures.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
It was suggested that he take those photos and put them in his daughter's room or put them aside so that mom can deal in a little easier fashion, and he did do that, but he mourns differently. She cannot look at pictures or videotapes or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting, because I feel more that way, and my husband is, you know, doing albums and all, you know, was.
Mm-hmm.
One of the
quite
other
interesting
things...
Let me, if I might, just add that quite interesting. She reads to him at night from our book as well as many other books on loss. And that's how he likes to hear. He'd rather her read to him rather than read books.
Very interesting. And one of the interesting things about your book, too, is, and your groups, I assume, they don't limit the ages. It's every age of child, right?
Yes. We have where children have died at the age of one, and I think the oldest is 42.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
I do, too, because we sometimes deny the parents of older children.
And the siblings. Adult children die, we don't realize it's as significant as any loss. I mean, that's a significant loss.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And also, you have a grandparent in here, too, I believe, right?
We have two grandparents, yes. Actually, Mike, who wrote on sibling loss, his mom wrote as well, and I think he was 30 when his brother died, and his mom wrote about her son's children, her grandchildren, two of them.
And it's great having something for an adult sibling, isn't it, Heidi?
Well, and I think Mike brought up such a good point. When he and his brother were younger, there was a lot of sibling rivalry, which is normal among siblings. And it wasn't until they got to be adults that they became very, very close and worked through all that rivalry. And unfortunately, some kids don't have that opportunity to see that in the long run, you probably would be close to your sibling had they lived to adulthood.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we work things through.
Right, right. And as I guess as you know, Heidi, people refer to siblings as having two losses, their brother or sister, and sometimes the abandonment of their parents,
right,
because the focus of mom and dad is on their child who just died.
Absolutely. We lose the family we once knew. We lose the parents we once knew because now we're living in a household of grieving people and grieving parents.
Mm-hmm.
Understandably,
mm-hmm.
But it is a double loss for children.
Mm-hmm.
So, Emily, if people live in the metropolitan area, New York City area, you're in private practice so they could get in touch with you?
Yes, the private practice in Manhattan in New York City and also in New Rochelle in Westchester. And the best way to get in touch with me is through email, I think, Laitman@AOL.com.
Okay, and it's could you spell that for them?
Sure. Laitman is Laitmon at AOL.com.
Great. And do
if
you
they're
do...
interested in the book, they can go to the book's website, which
and...
is Our Children, Our Hearts.
Okay, OurChildrenOurHearts.com. And the book is also on our website, too, thegriefblog.com right now.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll be able to get that book. Well, how did people feel when it was all done? I mean, did you have a party or, you know, how did it go?
We did. We had a launching of the book, and the writers were very, very enthusiastic, and what this has done for the writers is also quite significant. People have said thanks for letting me have the opportunity to put into words the feelings that I've had in my heart for so many years. So some people, the children have died 25, 30 years ago. More of them are more recent, but still putting their feelings down in paper was very, very helpful. And we know that it will be well received, and it already is, by other people who are newly bereaved and need ways to cope and
mm-hmm.
need something.
And it's so hopeful, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's a message of hope in this book, which I think is really important.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I liked Molly Fuma, The Paradox of Healing.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to read that, unless you've got your book and you want to read it.
Go ahead. You go ahead.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, have you got your book? Okay. Heidi, why don't you read it, and we'll go out on
page,
the show with this.
What page are you on? Can you tell me?
I'm on page 149.
Okay.
Oh, that's right, Heidi. You don't have it. I've got it.
Emily, read it.
I have
You
it.
Want to read it? Okay,
go
ahead, Emily. We'll go out on the show with this.
Okay.
Thank
the
you.
Paradox of Healing. The paradox of healing is that it is both holding on and letting go. We hold on to memories, and we let them go. We hold on to feelings, and we let them go. We hold on to an old way of being because the self we still are resides there, and we let go to a new way of being so the self can live on.
Well, thank you, Emily. That is so beautiful. Thanks for writing this for the world and for being on the show and for all the work that you do.
And thank you for doing what you guys do. Great.
Thanks, Emily.
Okay.
So it's time for our break, and when we come back from break, we're going to go on with our second guest, and we want to thank Emily Laitman for being on the show. Our next guest, when we come back, will be Joanne Cacciatore. Joanne Cacciatore found her life's purpose challenges after the death of her daughter, Cheyenne, and during the birth process. By 1996, the former stay-at-home mom had started a foundation, Ms. So please stay tuned for the next section of the show to hear about this.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
This is Dr. Heidi Horsley, co-host of Healing the Grieving Heart. When you've lost someone close to you, the holidays sometimes aren't as happy as they used to be. That's one of the reasons we created the Grief Blog. Visit www.thegriefblog.com and take advantage of the articles, stories, radio show archives, and comments all about dealing with loss. We'd love it if you'd share some of your holiday stories, poems, recipes, and traditions with our growing community of people just like you and just like me who've lost someone close to them. It's as easy as sending an email and a great way to remember and honor your loved one. Please tune in Thursdays, 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern, to Healing the Grieving Heart on Voice America, and have a happy and safe holiday season.
Save the date. The Compassionate Friends 31st National Conference will be held July 18th through 20th, 2008, in the home of country music, Nashville, Tennessee. If you've experienced the devastating death of a child in your family, you will not want to miss the weekend of friendship, understanding, and hope, when more than 1,200 people just like you will join together. Said one person in describing last summer's 2007 National Conference, "There was so much love and compassion, you could feel it in the air." To learn more about the 2008 National Conference, the pre-conference professional outreach day, and the popular 2-mile walk to remember, visit CompassionateFriends.org or call 877-969-0010. Detailed information on the conference will be posted to the national website as it becomes available.
This is Dr. Gloria Horsley. Just a reminder to our listeners that you can own 10 of the very best Healing the Grieving Heart shows, available on CD. Our listeners tell us that they have used these shows to examine the many viewpoints of grief and to stimulate conversation on this difficult subject. Call toll-free 877-969-0010, that's 877-969-0010, to order a set, or visit the CompassionateFriends.org website and click on TCF Originals for the opportunity to purchase this specially priced set at only $60 for 10 CDs plus shipping and handling. Heidi and I have donated all the proceeds to the Compassionate Friends to help bereaved families following the death of a child.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi on Healing the Grieving Heart.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. I'm Dr. Heidi with my mom, Dr. Gloria, and we're talking today about finding meaning after the death of a child. And our second guest is Dr. Joanne Cacciatore. Dr. Joanne Cacciatore found her life's purpose and challenges after the death of her daughter, Cheyenne, during the birth process. By 1996, the former stay-at-home mother of four had founded the Mothers in Sympathy and Support Foundation, known as MISS. This foundation is dedicated to providing crisis support and long-term aid to families after the death of a child. Welcome to the show, Joanne.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you on the show. I am just so impressed with your website and the work you're doing. It's just kind of amazing, isn't it, Heidi?
Absolutely. It's wonderful. It's very comprehensive.
Thank
you.
Yeah,
we were just going on your YouTube with different folks that have lost children. On you can go through your site and the MISS site, M-I-S-S, Mothers in Sympathy of Support Foundation. And it's just wonderful. Tell us about your daughter Cheyenne dying.
Well, boy, that was quite a journey. Almost 14 years ago, on July 27th, it'll be 14 years. And I do have to say that there isn't a moment of any day, of any week, or month or year when I don't miss her physical presence in my life. She died 15 minutes before she was born on her due date. She had a traumatic birth, experienced a traumatic birth, and she died, and they did not make any attempts to revive her. They were concerned about cerebral palsy because she had been without oxygen for 15 minutes. I would have liked that to be my decision, but it wasn't. And she was 8 pounds, 22 inches long. A postmortem evaluation revealed no identifiable cause of death other than the traumatic birth. So in terms of her physical health, she was perfectly healthy. She had no other identifiable mechanism for death. They sent me home. I mean, I could hear babies being born around me and, you know, the joyous delight of other parents in the labor and delivery wards at the hospitals. I had a completely natural childbirth, so I was able to go home within 2 or 3 hours, I think, after she was born, when they took her body to the morgue, and I was no longer able to spend time with her, or so I thought, because options were not made clear to me at that point. I decided to leave, and I left the hospital, like I said, about 2 or 3 hours after I had given birth to her. Yes, and I went home and completely and wholly unprepared for what I was about to face. My milk came in the next day, and you know, I had milk for 10 months for a phantom, a baby who died, and no one told me what to do with the milk. I did not see a social worker or a pastor or a chaplain or really a bereavement person who was well trained at the hospital. So I didn't really know what I was about the anything about the journey I had embarked upon at that point. So you know, things started to get grim from there. As they do during the acute crisis, of course, your brain in a sense shuts down and you go on survival mode. And when the dust starts to settle, your brain starts to fully digest what's happened.
Also, Joanne, in your case, not only are you emotionally and psychologically grieving, but your body is healing.
Absolutely. You bet. I mean, that's one of the unique things about the death of a young baby is that you're dealing with the aftermath of childbirth, which, even when the outcome is good and everyone's happy, is traumatic by itself.
Right, exactly. And recovery is difficult even in the best of situations.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. So, I went into a really dark place. I call it the abyss. Within three months, I weighed about 90 pounds.
Oh, my gosh.
I thought about suicide every day for 10 months. I'm not averse to publicly saying that because I think it's important to talk about it. We know that a lot of bereaved mothers think about ending their lives, and even some bereaved fathers consider it. It's such a state of utter despair, and you are so socially isolated from others. I remember being surrounded by people who thought words of comfort were things like, you know, well, at least you have three other ones. Well, at least it wasn't one of your older ones who died, as if you can measure a mother's love by the amount of time they have with their child. I remember being surrounded by things like, you know, comments like, well, at least she didn't suffer, or there might have been something wrong with her, or don't you think 3 months is too long to be still grieving? You know, those silly things that people say to grievers.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I used to imagine myself on an island, and I used to imagine myself as the only person on this island, and I was so alone in my pain that I couldn't bear, that breathing hurt. And I thought to myself, I was calling phone numbers out of the yellow pages, one disconnected phone number after another, looking for some help at 2 o'clock in the morning one day, and I said, this is insane. Someday I'm going to make sure that we give voices to women and their families after they experience the death of a child.
Absolutely, and I have to interrupt you for a minute, Joanne, because you said at that point there wasn't a foundation like MISS, and you said breathing even hurt. And on the YouTube video, one of the powerful things I think that was on there was that a woman said, "The MISS Foundation gave me air to breathe when I didn't think I had any."
Yeah, yeah,
and I love that. And you didn't have any either, and you had no place to turn.
Yeah, I didn't. I eventually, after about, I think it was about 4 months, found a local compassionate friends group, thankfully, because I could at least connect with some people there, and was extremely grateful. But I really felt a calling for advocacy. Advocacy became my thing. I wanted for our society to understand that the way that we shape the socio-political system in which bereaved parents exist affects the microsystem. It affects the individual. The way that we stigmatize losses related to suicide, losses related to AIDS, losses related to stillbirth, or how we judge the value of someone's loss, it comes from a larger political system. And I felt like this was really, really important and being missed. And so the foundation emerged out of that need, to pull people together in support, of one another and to develop camaraderie and friendships that really endure long beyond, what many, many friendships do, but also to give people a place where they could find their voice, where they could use their voice for social change. I mean, I think that this is one of the most important things that bereaved parents can do. Look at what John Walsh has done in the aftermath of Adam's absolutely tragic death,
right,
or what Polly Kloss's dad has done. I mean, the most significant effects in our world often come from people who experience trauma and tragedy.
Mm-hmm. So you were able, and how long after Cheyenne died did you start doing that, did you say?
2 years.
So for our audience out there, some of them are fairly newly bereaved, and I hope you're hearing what she is saying so eloquently, is that the first year was hell. You were even thinking about killing yourself. Mm-hmm. And then 2 years, you started to move into some kind of action. So if you're newly bereaved, don't worry. Just survive, right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, what I tell people all the time is that my daughter's life was worthy of pause.
Oh, I like that. Excellent.
You know, she deserved for me to stop right where I was and say, you know what? I earned every tear I'm going to shed into my ocean of grief. I am going to take a step back, and I'm going to mourn her death in the way that she deserved. And I did that, and I got a lot of crap. I got to say, I got a lot of crap from people about it, especially the people who love me the most, my family. They were really wanting to prompt me to move forward before I was ready. And I resisted those promptings. I said, you know what? You know, you guys can go on with life if that's what you need to do, but I need to stay here in my grief and wallow.
Well, and I also like that, Joanne, because if Cheyenne had lived, you would have been giving her an incredible amount of time and energy.
That's right.
And
that's
so
right.
With her dying, you were still giving her and honoring her and giving her time and energy initially, and that's okay. Like you
Absolutely.
Said, that was okay.
It's not only okay, it's necessary.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at least for me it was. I too believe, Viktor Frankl says, that which is to give light must endure burning.
Mm-hmm.
Those were my burning days. Those were the days where I was in the pit of the abyss, and there was darkness and utter despair. And in order for me to transcend my place in the world, that is where I needed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, 14 years later, I mourn her absence in my life every day. I am by no means over it. I will never be over it.
Mm-hmm.
I miss her and love her as I love my other children. And that's okay. I've learned to integrate that in my life. Someday,
you don't want to be over her. You want to learn to integrate her and have a new relationship with her.
Absolutely. It's parenting of a different kind. Yes. Thank you. Yes.
You know, it's kind of interesting because we had Candy Leitner on the show, and Candy Leitner founded Mothers Against Drunk Driving 3 days after her child was killed. And she said right out on the show it was too early, and I did nothing but work on the foundation for 5 years. And after 5 years, I had to grieve my child's death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I thought that was incredible for her to say that, because that organization has done so much good in the world, but she herself felt that it was a little early. So if you're taking care of yourself, keep doing it. It's time for us to go on a break right now, and when we come back from break, we'll be talking more about the topic of finding meaning after the death of a child with our guest, Joanne Cacciatore, founder of Miss Mothers in Sympathy and Support. You can reach us through our blog, thegriefblog.com, and you can download these shows on iTunes, and please log in and email us with information about you and what you're doing in your life. These shows are brought to you by the Open to Hope Foundation. Please stay tuned for more.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Hello, Doctors Gloria and Heidi are pleased to announce that their new book, Teen Grief Relief, Parenting with Understanding, Support, and Guidance, published by Rainbow Books, is now available. Grief Relief can be ordered through thegriefblog.com as well as Amazon. Book orders can be made through the Book Clearinghouse at 800-431-1579. This book is a must for any family suffering a loss. Get your copy right now at thegriefreliefblog.com or amazon.com.
This is Dr. Gloria Horsley, host of Healing the Grieving Heart. When you're not listening to our show every Thursday at 9 Pacific, noon Eastern, visit our new blog at thegriefblog.com. It's loaded with articles, personal stories, poems, and more. Our blog is dedicated to helping you and your family deal with loss. While you're there, submit your loved one's favorite recipes, your poems, and stories, and listen to our archives of our past shows. Thegriefblog.com is where you'll find us. And, of course, listen to our show every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, here on Voice America.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi for our final segment of Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and renewal for those who have suffered the loss of a loved one.
to Healing the Grieving Heart. I'm Dr. Heidi with my mom, Dr. Gloria, and we're talking today about finding meaning after the death of a child with our second guest, Dr. Joanne Cacciatore. Welcome back to the show, Joanne and Gloria.
Thank you, Heidi. Well, Joanne, I just think it's so amazing. Again, I want to talk a little bit about the MISS organization because you're doing so many things. Now, after Cheyenne died, you took time off, took care of yourself. Then you went on after 2 years and started this. Were you a social worker at the time, or did you have to go through the whole education process too?
No, I actually went back to school. I was a stay-at-home mom. I went back to school. I got a couple of bachelor's degrees and a master's degree and then went on for my doctorate.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's been a busy decade.
All the time you were founding the organization?
Yes, that's correct.
Amazing. So what did you get your PhD in?
My PhD is in human sciences from the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, and I actually studied with Dr. John Dufresne, who is one of the earliest researchers to study the effects of child death in families across cultures around the world. So I was very honored. I had been reading Dufresne's work for quite a number of years and was totally honored to have him as my committee chair.
And did you do your dissertation then on the death of a child? Or
yes. Yes, my dissertation is actually on ritualization and maternal grief and anxiety.
Interesting.
Now, ritualization, does that mean actually doing rituals, or how? What is it?
Yes, holding and seeing the child after the child died and the effects of that. And what I found was very, very interesting, and it was that in the long term, holding and seeing the child who died, ritualization that centered on being able to say goodbye and taking their time with the child's body actually helped to reduce maternal anxiety and depression.
Mm-hmm.
In the long term.
Yeah. In the long term?
Yes.
Now, what do you say? You didn't see your child, so what would you say? Or you saw your child, but you didn't get to hold her after like you would have liked?
I did hold her, but only for a few hours, and then they took her body. You know, there's a whole kind of home funeral movement, a wave coming about, which is kind of to deinstitutionalize death in society. And what I would have liked are some options around her death, perhaps the option of bringing her body home. This is something that until the turn of the century, most of our dead were taken care of at home. Strobe and Strobe just published a study on this, and they found similar findings that people who had an opportunity to take their child's body home actually had lower scores of grief responses,
Cheyenne's siblings able to hold her and say goodbye as well?
Unfortunately not. I was under a great deal of pressure from my family of origin not to allow my children to see her. And they were ages 3, 4, and 5, and they still suffer to this day. Mm-hmm. Especially my second son, who's now 20, has his sister's name tattooed on his arm, and he was actually seeing the school counselor because he was feeling angry at me for not allowing him to come and say goodbye to her.
Mm-hmm.
Huge mistake on my part. Huge mistake.
Okay, but now tell me, it's a huge mistake on your part. We have got an audience of people who are feeling they've made some huge mistakes. How do you deal with that? How can they deal with it?
Well, one of the ways that I dealt with it with my children was I sat down and I had an honest conversation. I apologized and I asked their forgiveness. I believe that I, in that moment, was making decisions from a place of complete and utter despair and confusion.
Wasn't the medical community also giving you advice on how to proceed?
You bet they were.
Like they need to be educated as well on these kind of issues.
Absolutely, and that's part of what I do. I just got back. I taught at UC Davis for a week, and I work with local hospitals and hospitals around the country to help teach psychosocial intervention skills. This is critically important because how do you expect people to make a decision today and understand the potential ramifications in 1 year or 5 years or 10 years on that family?
Mm-hmm.
And so the onus of responsibility falls on caregivers to be educated and prepared to guide families through these traumatic experiences.
Absolutely.
So what I did was
grieving can't be expected to know what to do at that moment because you didn't expect for your daughter to be born dead.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's what I told my children, and I asked their forgiveness. And they, of course, graciously offered me their forgiveness. And instead, what I've done is included them in other acts of ritual since then. I've given them other opportunities to share in their sister's experience of life and death.
And so what kind of opportunities can our audience give? You know, what are some ideas for them?
Well, we do candle lighting. We have National Children's Memorial Day, and my children have all spoken at National Children's Memorial Day, written things and spoken. We have gone to the cemetery together often throughout the years as a family, and I give them opportunities each to spend their own time alone with her at the gravesite. You know, all of us will go and take a little walk around while they individually spend alone time. I have given
Okay, what if my family thinks that's nuts?
Yeah,
you know, my immediate family, my uncles and aunts and people out in the world. What about that?
Well, you know, people may think you're nuts. I mean, you know, here's the thing. It's impossible to know what helps one person may not help another person.
Mm-hmm.
What may call to you or speak to you and provide you with some degree of healing may be different for me. Also, that person may not have ever had an experience of loss, so how in the world would they know what would work for them? So, I mean, I encourage people to do things that feel right for them and explain to their family, if their family doesn't understand, this is just what I need, and I hope that even if you don't understand, that you love me enough to just support me in this.
Mm-hmm. Now, talk a little bit about, I know something that's very dear to mothers' hearts, is talk about getting birth certificates for stillbirths.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is the irony, is that in every state, all 50 states, when my daughter died 15 minutes before she was born on her due date, the state of Arizona issued me a death certificate, and there was a mandate that I had to bury or cremate. Of course, there's a dead human body. What are you going to do with it? Of course, and I wanted to, but when I called the state of Arizona to ask for her birth certificate, they said that I wouldn't get a birth certificate. Now, Oriana Fallaci, beautiful author, wrote, "The worst is having to say that one has not existed."
Mm-hmm.
And there's an implicit message in there when we tell a woman, here's your death certificate, yes, you have to bury your baby. There's an implicit message to her that your baby never existed. And by denying the existence of the baby, in a sense, you deny her very existence, because the mother identifies so much with her baby.
Well, and the day that you had Cheyenne, you had known Cheyenne for 9 months.
10 months, yeah, 40 weeks.
With Cheyenne.
Yes, absolutely.
Before she was born. So, I mean, there was a bond there already.
Oh, absolutely. And then let's not forget the trauma of childbirth itself.
Right.
So, you know, I called the state and I said I got her death certificate but not her birth certificate. And they said, well, you won't get one because she wasn't born. Well, I had, of course, breast milk and 10 months of pregnancy and a big sagging belly where
and a baby that you held.
And a baby I held and buried, and
and you delivered her,
and I gave birth to her, indeed.
Right.
So I lobby. I began to lobby and fought to change the law so that it could be an option. It didn't cost the state anything. In fact, it's revenue generating for the state of Arizona because there's a fee attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
Where if women and their families would like to get a certificate of birth resulting in stillbirth, not a certificate of live birth, that's what they currently issue,
right.
Certificate of live birth, not a certificate of live birth, but a certificate of birth resulting in stillbirth, that they have the option to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And we have been successful in 25 states. We have failed in New York. New York politics have again blocked our efforts at giving women the choices that they deserve after this experience.
Mm-hmm. All right. So if some of our listeners are from New York and they want to work on this, how would they get in touch with you?
Contact me, please, at dr_dr_Joanne, Joanne, at missfoundation.org.
And you can go on the internet and go to the Miss Foundation website. It's truly amazing. And for you folks in the Arizona area, you have some groups, right, and some things going on.
Yes, actually...
Except nationally, too, don't you?
Internationally. We just started our 75th group in Romania.
Oh, fantastic.
Good for
you, well, it's time for us to close the show now, and I want to thank you so much. It's been great having you on the show,
well,
Joanne.
Well, thank you, and thank you for your good work. I'm just so appreciative of what you do. Thank you both.
Yeah,
thanks, Joanne. Love your passion around this.
Absolutely. It's great. Please stay tuned again next week when our topic will be Bereaved Parents USA, and our guest will be Beverly Hurley, President of the National Board of Directors of Bereaved Parents USA. This show is archived on our blog, thebriefblog.com, as well as the Compassionate Friends website, and it is brought to you by the Open to Hope Foundation. Please stay tuned again next Thursday at 9 Pacific Standard, 12 Eastern, for more of Healing the Grieving Heart. Remember, others have been there and made it. You can, too. You need not walk alone. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host,
Dr. Heidi Horsley. Emily and Joanne, thank you for all you do to help all of us find meaning again after the death of a family member.
You have been listening to Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi Horsley on Healing the Grieving Heart, heard live every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on health.voiceamerica.com and worldtalkradio.com. Healing the Grieving Heart is archived on thegriefblog.com as well as the CompassionateFriends.org websites. Tune in again next week, and thanks for listening.